Disc 8.
Breeda and I were given quarters in the Roman part of the palace. No one tried to part us this time. We had a small room, lime-washed, with a straw mattress, and Willibald said we should wait there. And we did until we got bored with waiting, after which we explored the palace, finding it full of priests and monks. They looked at us strangely, for both of us wore arm rings cut with Danish runes. I was a fool in those days, a clumsy fool, and did not have the courtesy to take the arm rings off. True, some English wore them, especially the warriors, but not in Alfred's palace. There were plenty of warriors in his household. Many of them the great eldermen who were Alfred's courtiers, led his retainers, and were rewarded by land. But such men were far outnumbered by priests, and only a handful of men, the trusted bodyguard of the king's household, were permitted to carry weapons in the palace. In truth, it was more like a monastery than a king's court. In one room there were a dozen monks copying books, their pens scratching busily, and there were three chapels, one of them beside a courtyard that was full of flowers. It was beautiful, that courtyard, buzzing with bees and thick with fragrance. Neat Genga was just pissing on one of the flowering bushes when a voice spoke behind us. The Romans made the courtyard. I turned and saw Alfred. I went on one knee, as a man should when he sees a king, and he waved me up. He was wearing woolen breeches, long boots and a simple linen shirt, and he had no escort, neither guard nor priest. His right sleeve was ink-stained. "You are welcome, Uhtred," he said. "Thank you, Lord," I said, wondering where his entourage was. I had never seen him without a slew of priests within fawning distance, but he was quite alone that day. "And Breeda," he said, "is that your dog?" "He is," she said defiantly. "He looks a fine beast. Come." He ushered us through a door into what was evidently his own private chamber. It had a tall desk at which he could stand and write. The desk had four candle holders, though as it was daylight the candles were not lit. A small table held a bowl of water so he could wash the ink off his hands. There was a couch, covered in sheepskins, a stool on which were piled six books and a sheaf of parchments, and a low altar on which was an ivory crucifix and two jewelled reliquaries. The remains of a meal were on the window ledge. He moved the plates, bent to kiss the altar, then sat on the ledge and began sharpening some quills for writing. "It is kind of you to come," he said mildly. "I was going to talk with you after supper tonight, but I saw you in the garden, so thought we could talk now." He smiled, and I, lout that I was, scowled. Breeda squatted by the door, with Neat Genga close to her. "Elderman Ethelred tells me you are a considerable warrior, Uhtred," Alfred said. "I've been lucky, Lord." "Luck is good, or so my own warriors tell me. I have not yet worked out a theology of luck, and perhaps I never will. Can there be luck if God disposes?" He frowned at me for a few heartbeats, evidently thinking about the apparent contradiction, but then dismissed the problem as an amusement for another day. "So I suppose I was wrong to try to encourage you to the priesthood." "There's nothing wrong with encouragement, Lord," I said, "but I had no wish to be a priest." "So you ran away from me." "Why?"